I'm Derek, and this is the 3 a.m. Mystery Club podcast. I have a mini episode for you, a case that I actually just discovered today. And it's funny because when I found this case, my first thought was, this seems like something I should have heard of before and that I should know. And it feels really familiar and I don't really know it. And when I texted, because Brandon, Rowena, and I always text each other and say, hey, have you heard of this case? Just to make sure that it's fresh and we don't know it. Rowena said, no, I don't know that case, but I feel like I should, was the exact thought that I had. So none of us know this. And here I go. This is the story of Katie Beers. Katie Beers grew up in Long Island in the 80s and early 90s. Her biological mother is Marilyn Beers, but she primarily grew up living with her godmother, Linda, and Linda's husband, Sal. Katie's biological mother, Marilyn, did not know how to care for herself, let alone a child. She wasn't known as being the most together person, to say the least. She relied on Linda to provide care for Katie. This was also a way for Marilyn to avoid having to pay for childcare. Marilyn was always working. She was a taxi driver and a caregiver. Most of Katie's childhood memories revolve around various chores. She was always doing laundry, cleaning the bathroom, cooking dinner, etc. The whole time I was reading about this and watching shows on it, I just kept thinking Katie's childhood sounded like Cinderella in the agony years, basically. Katie felt as if this was her purpose, always cleaning and having to please her godmother, Linda. She recalls going by herself at around 4 years old to the laundromat to do Sal and Linda's laundry, needing assistance from strangers also in the laundromat to help her.
Four?
That's what she said. And I remember thinking, like, that is really young, but that's what she said in an interview I saw.
Wow.
That's crazy. I could not. My kids are 8 and 9, and there's no way they can do that alone. Wow.
And this is who she was staying with because it was the better option.
Right.
In 1992, Katie was 9 years old and living with Sal and her godmother Linda in Bayshore, New York. She did not attend school very often between kindergarten and third grade because it would have interfered with her doing chores for Linda and Sal. Because of this, she did not have very many friends. Lacking friendships and a mother's love, the happiest moments of Katie's childhood was when she got to spend time with her brother, John, who was about 6 years older than Katie and lived with their biological mother, Marilyn. Katie informed John of the abuse she had suffered at the hands of Linda and Sal, and he told Marilyn that she had to rescue her daughter from that horrific situation. In the spring of 1992, Marilyn came to get Katie and essentially kidnapped her from Linda's home. She came one day when Linda was napping. They packed some belongings and left the residence. Linda and Marilyn fought over Katie for pretty much as long as Katie could remember, so this event really escalated the already strained friendship. Katie was thrilled to be able to say she was living with her mother. She had never lived in the same place as her mom, Marilyn, for any significant period of time, so this was a welcome change, especially after having to do chores relentlessly for years for her godmother, Linda. Christmas of 1992 was Katie's most standard and joyful childhood Christmas. She enjoyed being with her family for the first time in her life. That Christmas marked at least 6 months since Katie had seen Linda, her godmother. Katie's birthday is between Christmas and New Year's. Linda wanted to celebrate Katie's 10th birthday with her that year. Given the animosity between Linda and Katie's biological mother, Marilyn, that was not going to happen, and Marilyn did not want Linda to have any part in Katie's birthday celebrations. It was frustrating and confusing for Katie to have these two mother figures constantly pulling her in different directions. Katie did have two male role models in her life, her brother John and a man named Big John Esposito. a figure in her brother John's life that grew to be like a family member to Katie. As Katie grew to be a bit older, she would go to Big John's house with her brother. Big John provided a sense of security and treated Katie and John to things their mother wouldn't have been able to afford, such as trips to an arcade called the Spaceplex in Neskonsin, New York, an arcade fantasy land complete with games and even had rides. Katie's favorite game was skee-ball. She says that she was never very good at it, but she loved playing it and always went for it first thing. On December 28, 1992, just 2 days before Katie's 10th birthday, Big John and Katie went to Spaceplex to celebrate. It was on this day that Katie was abducted. Larry Helfand, the manager of the Spaceplex at the time, recalls arriving to work that day and being informed a little girl was missing. He said at the time he wasn't even that concerned because in an arcade, children excitedly run off to different games and are seemingly missing, quote, missing, for a few minutes and then are pretty much immediately found. He assumed she was off playing a game or even hiding. But as the day turned to night and it was almost time to close, there was still no sign of Katie Beers. Larry recalls Big John being very anxious and saying he turned his back just for 1 second and Katie was gone. Larry called the owner of the arcade to tell him what was happening, who said he would take care of it and call the police. After searching the arcade when it was completely empty, I mean, they searched when people were there, they searched when it was empty. They searched nearby businesses, dumpsters, even the wooded areas surrounding the arcade. This turned up nothing. No sign of Katie, no clues, zero. At around 5:15 on that day, December 28th, Katie's godmother, Linda, received a disturbing message on her answering machine from a sobbing Katie. And I heard this message, and it was very sad and disturbing to hear this audio. She says, "Aunt Linda, a man kidnapped me and he had a knife. Oh no, here he comes. I gotta go." Click. By the time Linda got to her phone, Katie had already hung up. Despite that horrifying answering machine message, Katie would eventually be found. But there was a lot to talk about before that point would be reached. Katie recalls being led through a closet, which had a door that exposed a tunnel. She was forced to go through the door with her captor closing it behind her. They got to yet another door and were suddenly inside a very small room, about 6 feet by 7 or 6 feet by 8 feet tiny room. The room had a TV, a mattress, and a toilet. It was basically a dungeon. Katie's captor told her this was her new home and she was going to be there for a long while. Katie recalls quickly losing track of the days she spent inside that dungeon. One of the few luxuries she had, if you can call anything in that situation a luxury, was being able to have the TV on 24/7. Being able to see the news helped her to maintain some sort of sense of time. She saw her mother on the news crying, pleading for her safe return. This gave her some comfort. She knew that Marilyn wanted her to be found. This is a stark contrast to the indifference she felt when she would see her godmother Linda on the news. When she saw Linda's husband Sal on the news pleading for her safe return, she felt anger. Most of her memories of Sal included abuse of some kind, whether physical or sexual. The detective in charge of the case recalls his impression of Marilyn as an incompetent mother that was convinced Linda had orchestrated the whole thing in order to obtain custody of Katie. On January 6th, 10 days after the disappearance, Big John Esposito was questioned by authorities. John and Sal actually had the same lawyer. The lawyer was convinced John was telling the truth, so they decided to hold a press conference to let the public see how concerned John was for Katie. Back in the dungeon, Katie was losing hope. Until one day, the police showed up. She heard them in the house. She banged on the walls frantically in hopes that they would hear her. Unfortunately, they did not. but her abductor did. Horrifically, this led to her captor restraining her with chains. Now back to that phone call that was placed to Linda's answering machine. This call was traced to a phone booth outside of a nearby gas station that was located very close to the arcade. Not only was this call placed, but it actually didn't go through until the 19th attempt. 18 others were also placed to Linda's home phone. Another revelation soon followed. It was determined the answering machine from Katie was actually a recording, trying to trick investigators into thinking an escaped Katie made the call from the phone booth. An intentionally scripted scheme. Katie, seeing on the news that the police knew this phone call was actually a recording, suddenly had a sense of hope that she was going to be found. January 13th, 17 days after Katie's disappearance, John Esposito confesses he knows where Katie Beers is. She's behind the walls of his house. Authorities rush to the house. A detective on the case says the dungeon was hidden in a manner that you would have to see the video to even understand. They unscrewed a bookshelf from a wall, unrolled a carpet, and underneath found a concrete trap door, which led to the room where Katie was being held. John Esposito was convicted of kidnapping in the first degree. While in jail, he passed away from natural causes. I just want to say this, just some commentary on my part about this. Something that I thought was odd was I never actually heard yes or no if Linda, the godmother, was involved, which is odd to me because of all of those attempts to call her phone, like on the answering machine, how it took 19 times. I've never read anything yes or no about her being involved. It only said John. But he died in jail from natural causes. We now know Katie never made it to Spaceplex that day. She actually was never even there. He told her that's what they were going, where they were going that day, but it never happened. Her trust was betrayed so severely by the one adult figure she truly trusted. When Katie was rescued, the detective spoke of expecting to find a shaken, cowering girl, but he found someone who was surprisingly strong and at times even smiled, unable to contain her happiness that she was found. After 17 days of captivity, Katie Beers was free. She is a survivor. Katie is now happily married with children. She is a determined individual who makes sure that her childhood traumas do not have power over her anymore. And we at this podcast wish her the very best.
Sure. Wow. I can't believe sometimes that these things happen to actual human beings. Like, so horrifying and amazing that they get through it and can manage to, you know, live a life after that terrible, terrible right. thing.
And especially her, like having that horrific childhood and then having that happen to her by the one person she trusts. And my God, how many cases are there where we hear about this secret room underneath the floor or in the walls?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. I mean, it made me think of that Austrian girl, Natasha Kampusch.
Oh yeah. Horrifying, man. Her rough childhood was what got her through that, though. She had to grow up fast and strong.
Yeah, that saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, is really true.
So what was Big John's motive?
You know, as strange as this sounds, the motives weren't really discussed in detail from the shows that I watched and the articles that I read. However, I have heard Big John described as the definition of a pedophile. And at one point, I believe he tried to be a big brother for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters organization and was actually rejected.
Thank God.
Wow. And I know that the godparents weren't implicated, but do you think they had something to do with it too?
You know, I'm not clear on that, and I've wondered. I'm really not sure, but I will say this. I didn't mention it, but Sal actually was implicated in Katie's abuse.
I wonder, not
for the kidnapping plot, but for like abuse, I'm assuming, from when she lived with him. And He also went to jail, and I think he also died there.
good. He deserves it.